अहम चैरावतम नागम आहृयानु व्रजे व्रजम मरुद्गणायर्महावेगैर् नन्दगोष्ठा जिगांसया. प्लीज चेंट. Vaishnavis. Anybody else? Comedy? And the word for word, aham, I, cha, also, airavatam, named airavata, nagam, my elephant, ahruya, riding, anu vraje, will follow along, vrajam, to vraj, marut ganai, accompanied by the wind gods, Mahavegai, who move with great power, Nandagoshta, the cowherd community of Nanda Maharaj, Jigamsaya, with the intent of destroying. In the translation, I will follow you to Vraj, riding on my elephant Airavata, and taking with me the swift and powerful wind gods to decimate the cowherd village of Nanda Maharaj. And the purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Ki Jai. These Samvartika clouds were frightened by Indra's powerful mood and thus carried out his order, as described in the following verse. And so I'll just read through the next three verses. Shri Shukuvacha Ittam Mogavata Khyapta Meganir Mukta Bandhana Nandagokulamasharai Pidayam Asurojasa. Shukadev Goswami said, on Indra's order, the clouds of universal destruction released untimely from their bonds went to the cowherd pastures of Nanda Maharaj. There they began to torment the inhabitants by powerfully pouring down the torrents of rain upon them. And another purport. The Samvartika clouds could cover the entire earth with a single vast ocean. With great strength, these clouds began flooding the simple land of Vraj. Vidyotamana vidyudbi stananta stanayitnubi tivrayan marudganayanuna vavrishurjala sharkara. Propelled by the fearsome wind gods, the clouds blazed with lightning bolts and roared with thunder as they hurled down hailstones. Srila Sridhar Swami explains that the word marudganai indicates the seven great winds, such as Ahav Avaha, who preside over the region of Bhuvarloka, and Prabha, who holds the planets in their places. Stuna stula varshadhara munchatoshva brishva bikshnasha jalo gai plavyamana bud nadrishyata naton natam. As the clouds released torrents of rain as thick as massive columns, the earth was submerged in the flood, and high ground could no longer be distinguished from low. Om Agyanati Mirandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bishtam Stapitam Hena Bhutade Swayam Rupa Kadam Haiyam Dadati Swapadantikam He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dhina Bandha Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kanta Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Rishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Mukham Karoti Vachalam Pangum Langayate Girim Yatkripam Tamaham Vande Shri Gurum Dinataranam Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prashtaya Bhutale Shrimate Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamine Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Paschati Deshatarine Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. Jai. Hare Krishna. Happy Gaur Purnim, everybody. It's one of the most special days for us Gaudiya Vaishnavas. We can say the biggest day, because this is the day of mercy. This is the day we can all really, if we pour our consciousness in the right way, we can cash in. And we can really take advantage of this wonderful opportunity that has been given to us by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. I have to admit, I'm in a bit of a predicament, because on one hand, this is the Govardhan Leela. So we're speaking about Giriraj, and we're speaking about Haridas Varya. He's the best devotee of Krishna. And then on the other hand, it's Gaur Purnim. And so we have to speak about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. And when I was studying and looking and seeing, what can I do? Because it's Bhagavatam class, I like to speak whatever the Bhagavatam is speaking. Actually, Suta Goswami prays like this in the beginning of the Bhagavatam. He prays to Shukadeva Goswami that you were able to answer your father in the form of the echoes of the trees when he called out, "O son," when Shukadeva Goswami left. You were able to enter into those hearts, the hearts of those trees, and pacify Vyasadeva. In the same way, please enter into my heart and speak to this assembly at Naimisharanya. It's a beautiful prayer that he's spoken in the Bhagavatam. And one of our acharyas, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he says, this is the mood of somebody who speaks the Bhagavatam. Simply, we're praying to Shukadeva Goswami and saying, whatever you want to say, let me say that. We don't come to the Bhagavatam class with an agenda. Even if it's a transcendental agenda, like speaking about some other topic, the idea is we open the Bhagavatam wherever we're at the Bhagavatam. Bhagavatam is giving class. And so, I don't like to break that. It's a particular thing that I've tried to hold myself to. And so I was in a bit of a predicament, thinking, what to do? You know, how can I get around this? And so I read this chapter, and I found a place where we can accomplish both goals. So I pray for all of your blessings that I'll be able to speak what I'm going to say nicely and eloquently, and that it may enliven your hearts and enliven Srila Prabhupada's heart and make the deities happy. And at the least, if it does none of those things, it may purify me a little bit. So please, I need your blessings and your prayers. So, we're in the thick of the Govardhan Leela. We're in the very thick of it. Indra has just sent the Sambhartika clouds, which, if none of you know, the Sambhartika cloud is the cloud that's used at the end of the universe. When the universe is destroyed, then the Samvartika cloud is sent, and the rains and the lightning and the hail that comes, it just completely demolishes everything. In a short period of time, nothing is left. And that sets a clean slate for the next creation, so there can be that endless cycle of the jiva's desires being fulfilled and opportunities for liberation and many, many different things. But the Samvartika cloud is an agent of ultimate destruction. And so Indra has sent that cloud to Vraj because, in short, he's really, really ticked off. He didn't get his sacrifice, which he's accustomed to getting, and which, even by Vedic standards, he's supposed to get. And so now he's reacting in the harshest possible way. He's sending these clouds of universal destruction. He sent all of the wind gods, the Maruts, the wind devatas. He sent them. He's coming himself, because if you want something done right, you do it yourself, right? So he's coming himself with his vajra that's been given by Vishnu. He's used that to kill Vritrasura. It's the most powerful weapon in the universe. So he's coming with that. I have my thunderbolt. I'll make sure. Nobody survives. This is the highest idea you can have of genocide, which we talked about in another class. And the level of anger and offense that is there in this very motivated move that Indra is making. But it's interesting because amid all of this, the tattva is very, very revealing of why this is happening. Because Krishna is orchestrating this. Krishna is the one who stopped the sacrifice. Krishna is the one who ticked off Indra and kind of capitulated this entire thing. And falling back onto the words of that same Acharya, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he's given us a little insight into exactly why this is happening. Why is Indra acting in such a harsh way towards such innocent people, towards such people that are so close to Krishna, and towards Krishna himself? So in his commentary on one of the verses of this chapter, he writes this. He says, "The severe distress Indra apparently inflicted upon the residents of Vrindavan was an arrangement made by Sri Krishna's pastime potency, the Lila Shakti, so that Krishna could taste the sweetness of their prema to his full satisfaction. For a hungry person, the pain of hunger increases the happiness he feels when he finally eats excellent food, and thus hunger can be said to enhance the pleasure of eating." So right there, this whole thing is orchestrated by Krishna's Shaktis. It's not Indra on his own coming out. He's also a puppet. He's being used to forward Krishna's ultimate goals. And Krishna's ultimate goal, because Krishna is Krishna, he has nothing to do but to relish love. He doesn't have any other objective. He has expansions for that, and expansions of expansions of expansions, to make sure everything happens, just simply by him willing it. So what's left for a person like that? The only thing that's left is to relish love. And so this is what Krishna does. He is Rasika Shekara. He relishes different relationships and love like nobody else can. He's Rasaraj. He's literally the king of relationships, the king of love. And so this is what he does. This whole pastime is just meant to facilitate that love in another different flavor. Because as Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur has pointed out here, the pain of hunger increases the happiness one feels when one finally eats excellent food. And thus, hunger can be said to enhance the pleasure of eating. So Krishna, by orchestrating this pastime, he's increased the hunger of the Vrajvasis. He's increased their desire and their need for his shelter. And so then, when they experience that shelter, which ultimately is already there, it's always there, it's just an apparent necessity, a reason for them to call out to him, then they feel that much more satisfaction when they achieve it. And then, when they feel that satisfaction on achieving it, he gets to taste that satisfaction. And so it goes like this, like this, like this. Everything's just a pretense. That's the word I was looking for. These are all just pretenses for that love to go on increasing and go on increasing and go on increasing. Their severe distress increases that hankering, like I said. And so when we think of the psychology of Krishna, because Krishna, he's the most complex person on the planet. In all of existence. He's the most complex person. But also, being the most amazing, wonderful, expansive, complex person, he's also the most simple person. And so if we think of a small child with sugar. When you're 5, when you're 4, when you're 3, you like sweet things. Doesn't matter what it is. I remember many Halloweens, you didn't care what goes in the bag. Maybe there's one thing you don't like and you remove, but it, by and large, it's sweet. And then as you grow up, you become a little more refined. And, I don't like this one, and you know, I don't want that. And maybe as you get older, things are too sweet. You eat something, it's too much sugar. But for Krishna, Krishna's like a child. Bhakti is like sugar. Krishna just wants sugar. He doesn't mind how it comes, what manner it comes, what package it comes in. Certainly, maybe those things can increase his enjoyment of it. But we hear so many examples. Krishna eating the banana peels of Vidura's wife. Krishna eating the moldy, rat-chewed, sweat-on, uncooked flat rice of Sudama. What does Krishna speak when he says this? He says the same verse from the Bhagavad Gita, Patram pushpam palam toyam, yo me bhaktya prayachchati. He says, Sudama, don't worry about the quality of what you're offering to me. I don't care about the nuances. I just want the sugar. I just want the sweetness. You have bhakti. There's bhakti in that puffed rice. It's not puffed rice. There's bhakti in that flat rice. Give it to me. And he snatches it from Sudama. And he eats it. Because Krishna is like this. He's bhakti priya madhava. The only thing that's dear to him is bhakti. So he's very simple in that way. It's very sweet. It's the only thing that he wants. And so the entire objective, the highest objective of his existence, and of the existence of everything else actually, is to facilitate the ongoing relationship between him and his devotees. This gives us a totally different understanding of this world, of our position, and of God's position. We think of the verse, Parichranaya sadhunam vinashaya chadushkritam dharmasam stapanartaya sambhavami yuge yuge. So Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita very clearly, I come to protect the sadhus, to protect good people and destroy bad people. Whenever bad people come and they mess dharma up, then I come and I reestablish it. So there's an external way to look at this, which is the first way that we ever look at it. Yes, God comes and he sets things right. And things degrade again, because that's the cyclical way that the Vedas show. Things move in a circle. Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga, Dwapara Yuga, Kali Yuga, Satya Yuga, Treta Yuga. It goes around and around and around. It's perfect, we screw it up. It becomes beyond repair, it's destroyed. Perfect, screwed up, blah, 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 over and over and over. Sadhunam. Parichranaya sadhunam vinashaya chadushkritam. So Krishna does this. But when we look deeper into this, in light of Krishna's actual heart, we understand that actually the only thing that matters here is parichranaya sadhunam. And it's not just that he's protecting the devotees, he's nourishing the devotees. He comes to nourish their love and to increase their love. Everything is just a pretense. Thus, we call this material world the Srishti Lila. This material world's main purpose, the chief purpose, because like everything else, things have multiple purposes. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he came for many different reasons. Krishna came for different reasons. Vishnu has different functions. We have different desires and functions. This world also has different desires and different functions. One function, which is a function we like to focus on a lot, and most devotees think is the chief reason for this world, is to allow the jivas to be rectified. That's not the prime function of the material world. Higher than that is to give them the opportunity to facilitate their independent desires. Because God is merciful and God isn't about force. Krishna isn't about putting a gun to your head and saying, this is how you have to do it. You have full freedom to see what you would like. And if you would like to come to something that is actually going to be eternal and ecstatic and wonderful all the time, you have the opportunity to do that. But as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna, at the end of the Bhagavad Gita, he speaks everything. And then he says, now you've heard what I've said, you decide. He doesn't say, you have to do it or you're going to hell. You have to do it or you're finished. He says, you decide. So this world, one of the reasons for its existence is to allow people to exercise their independence and to try to find happiness in whatever way they would like to find. But the prime reason for this material world's existence is the pleasure of Krishna. Therefore, it's called the Srishti Leela. Its entire manifestation centers around Krishna being able to do things here that don't go on in the spiritual world. And actually, when we look at it from this perspective, the material world is also spiritual. It's apparently material because it has qualities that don't exist in the spiritual world, like death. It's temporary. Things here end, and then they... This cyclical nature of this world, this is not in the spiritual world. In the spiritual world, everything goes on unlimitedly. And so certain things, they can't happen there, and so they happen here in this compartment of the spiritual world. This is Srishti Leela. This allows Krishna to relish specific wonderful things, different rasas, like we hear about the story of Jai and Vijay. Krishna wants a good fight. Vishnu wants a good fight. He's got that in. He contains everything, so he's looking also. I want a good fight. And so he has to come to the material world, and he sends a couple of his devotees to come play the part of big, big, big rakshasas and big asuras so that he can have that fight. But that's just apparent. So Ravana, Hiranyakashipu, Shishupal, Dantavakra, these characters, they're just apparently demons. Actually, their function, when we look at the highest aspect of it, is they're serving Krishna. They're serving Vishnu to give him that fight, to give him that pleasure, so that there can be some rasa. There's also some pleasure in it for them as his devotees. And even in the covered state, because Krishna's shaktis, they're orchestrating everything, there's some pleasure, there's some rasa, there's some relishment. So this is the highest aspect of Krishna's heart, and this is the highest aspect of the material world and the purpose in the material world. Because contrast must be there for there to be enjoyment. The idea that everything that is spiritual is going to become homogenous and going to become single-toned is ridiculous. Because even in this world, we must have contrast in order for things to increasingly get better. You need something to be negative in order for there to be a positive. If everything's just all positive, it quickly becomes normal and then it becomes boring and then you're looking for more. And then that becomes the contrast. Your boredom becomes the contrasting factor which allows you to enjoy the next thing that you find. The problem is in this world, things never last. So we're forced into this situation of contrast which is mostly negative because we're never able to find. As the innocence goes away, as naivety goes away, as we grow up and become more worldly in our life, then we're increasingly not able to find and lose ourselves in happiness. So that's one of the problems with this world. But that contrast also must be there in the spiritual world. It also must be there in spiritual existence because that allows things to go on increasing. Therefore, we hear about this pastime. We hear that Indra is coming and he's causing such fear and trepidation and turmoil amongst the Vrajvasis. The raindrops that are falling around Govardhan Hill are this wide, maybe wider. They're like huge pillars. Imagine, we don't have any really big columns in here, but just imagine the raindrop the size of this building and as tall as the sky. That's the raindrops of the Sambhartika cloud. You know, it can create an ocean that covers the entire world. And the thing is, Indra is just releasing it on Vraj. It doesn't even extend to Mathura because he's afraid of Kamsa. So he's not willing to send it to Mathura. It's only concentrated on Vraj. So the level of devastation that's here, that we're hearing described in these verses, it causes unbelievable sorrow and fear for the Vrajvasis. But that becomes a stimulant in the world of rasa. It becomes a stimulant for their love for Krishna. And it becomes an opportunity for that love to increase, as I was saying earlier. So Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, in the 88th chapter of the 10th canto, he explains this very nicely, the necessity of contrast. In this verse, he explains very, 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 very elaborately, it's about 15 pages long, why devotees go through trepidation and why devotees go through suffering and what that suffering looks like for different levels of devotees. And finally, his last reason for devotees suffering, apparent suffering, as we've heard from him in this chapter, is that these things are required in order to increase the love that they feel between Krishna and themselves. And also in order to allow certain pastimes to take place. Because if devotees were always complacent, they would have no reason to say, we need your help, please come. There would be no Nisringadev if Prahlad wasn't in the situation that he was in. There would be no Ram Leela if there wasn't a reason for Ram Leela to happen. There would be no Krishna Leela if there wasn't the apparent suffering caused by Kamsa to all of the demigods. These Leelas would not take place if they weren't orchestrated by the Shaktis. And so Srila Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur, he explains the necessity of this contrast. He says, the sunrise appears attractive because of the darkness of night. During the hot summer, cold water gives comfort. If anybody's ever been to India, if it's 110 degrees outside, there's nothing better than a cold shower. For some crazy people, they like to take cold showers in the winter in Chicago. But at least in India, when it's 110 degrees, a cold shower, or even when it's hot here, you jump in Lake Michigan, it's still cold. It never really gets like warm. You know, the summers aren't long enough, the lake is too big. So it's 90 degrees, 90 degrees outside. And you jump in Lake Michigan, ah. But then when it's cold, when the winter time comes, hot water is ecstasy. Lamplight appears attractive in darkness, not in the glaring light of the sun. If you take a lamp and you put it out at noon and the sun's out, there's no clouds, then you're not even going to see it. You walk right past it with a little lamp flame, you won't even see it. But if you put it in a dark room that doesn't have any windows at midnight, it becomes very brilliant. A candlelit dinner, it's very beautiful. So the contrast creates beauty. And then he gives this example, which we've already heard of, hunger. And when one is distressed by hunger, food tastes especially good. And then, because he's gone on so long with this 15-page purport, he says there's no need to elaborate more. But what he's saying is that even in spiritual existence, contrast creates a certain type of ecstasy. And it facilitates the increase and the incremental going on of that ecstasy. Because this is the nature of relationships. Relationships are all about back and forth, up and up and up, and rasa moves in a crooked way. It moves like a snake. You go from this bank to this bank to this bank, back and forth and back and forth, but all the time moving forward. Therefore, the topmost, the last word of the Vedas is raso vaisaha, that the absolute truth, he is relationship. The absolute truth, he literally is relationship. Therefore, Radha and Krishna are the absolute truth. Because Radha and Krishna, they are the personification, the eternal personification. It's not, they didn't become personified at any one particular point. It's not Mayavad. But they are the personification of love being reciprocated. This is Radha and Krishna. Raso Vaisaha. There's always a flow back and forth between two parties, increasing and increasing. Their only business is increasing. And moving forward, because Krishna, he's always trying to taste more. He's always looking to have more and more and more and more and more and more. He comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu because what better contrast can you find? What better way in this Srishti Leela, which is ultimately meant for his satisfaction anyway, what better way to facilitate the feeling of magnanimity and the experience of compassion than to come as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? Anarpita charim charat kurunayavatirna kalau. He's come into this age of Kali, kalau. Anarpita, that which was not given, charim, for a long time, chirat. He's come to give it. Avatirna. He's descended into this age of Kali to give that which was not given for a long time. Samarpayitum unatojvala bhakti rasam swabhakti rasam. Samarpayitum unatojvala rasam swabhakti shriyam. He's come to give the most brilliant, wonderful gem of swabhakti, of his own bhakti, of love for himself. He's descended into the deepest, darkest, most terrible place in all of existence, Kali Yuga. Things here, I mean, this doesn't even have to be quantified. The level of atrocities that happen in this place at this time are unbelievable. The things that people do to each other, the things that people do to their friends, the things that people do to their children, the things that people do to children, the things that governments do to their citizens, the things that people do to the environment. Kali Yuga is a terrible place. It's just, you don't have to be religious to understand that. That this particular time that we live in, it's not very pretty. In a matter of 50 years, 100 years, we've wrecked everything. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's come, Krishna has come into this place amidst all of these very, very crooked people, because we have to be honest, we're crooked. We lie and cheat and steal and do these things, especially if we don't think it's going to hurt somebody else and it's only going to help myself. We do these things. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's come into this place, into this Kali Yuga, to give what? To give the most pure, most amazing, wonderful, beautiful thing. To give his very heart, to give the love that is in his heart, to give people access to Vrindavan, which we're hearing about in the Bhagavatam. This is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's goal. It's not his only goal. There are more goals. He has many, many goals. Some we won't touch on because it would take another hour or two to explain. And those are actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's main goals, because we worship a greedy God. And Krishna, he wants to go on. He wants to keep increasing things, and he wants to increase the party, and he wants everything to just be sweeter and sweeter and sweeter. He wants to taste that sweetness, and he also wants to share it. But this aspect of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's arrival into this world is so that he can give people an opportunity to enter into that. And the least qualified people, he doesn't come to Satya Yuga. He could go to Satya Yuga where everybody, Om, all day, meditating. They don't even need to eat. Everything is in Omkar. They just chant Om. Don't need to eat, don't need to walk, don't need to do anything. They walk around sometimes for the sake of it. It's said that the four Kumaras, when they're, because they live in Siddhaloka, they're on this platform all the time. Satya Yuga, Kali Yuga, these things, they're only here in Mrityu Loka. But the rest of the universe, it's basically always Satya Yuga. And so the four Kumaras, they're fully self-realized. They just chant Om all day. And sometimes they like to relish speaking philosophy. And because they all know they're all perfectly pure, they just arbitrarily pick one or the other. You speak today. Even though we all know all the same stuff, we all know everything, you speak today. Okay, you speak today, you speak today. Because they're on that platform of purity. But Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he doesn't go there. He comes here to taste that compassion and to experience that. Because what does Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur say? A lamp is not beautiful if you put it in the middle of a glaring day. A lamp is beautiful when you put it in the amidst the darkest of darkness. And so, this is Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. He is that lamp amidst the darkest of all dark places. And he's given us an amazing opportunity. Because by doing that, by coming, you can't have any stipulations. You can't have rules and regulations. There are some rules and regulations to spiritual practice, but if you compare the rules and regulations that are given in Gaudiya Vaishnavism to the rules and regulations of any other spiritual practice, if you compare it to yoga, which practically can't be done, it's such a difficult process. If you look at actual Ashtanga yoga, if you compare it to Gyan, there are no rules practically. Even some acharyas and they've given verses from the Vedas that for bhakti there are really no rules. There are apparent rules, and there are things that if you do them you won't advance very fast. So there are prohibitions, but at the same time nothing stops you from performing bhakti. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he's come and he's established this, Because in order to give it to the lowest people, the highest thing to the lowest people, you have to wipe away the rule board. You take the blackboard, all the rules are written on, and you just finished. There are no rules for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's compassion. And this is highlighted very, very nicely by the words of Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami has given one very beautiful prayer to tie this back in with the Govardhan Leela, because ultimately we're speaking from the Bhagavatam. We have to stay a little chaste on the line of what the Bhagavatam is telling us. Raghunath Das Goswami, he gives a beautiful prayer when he's praying to Govardhan. He says, Nirupadi karanena shri shachi nandanena twai kapatishatopi twat priyena arpitosmi iti kalu mama yogya yogita mam agrinan nijanikatani vasam dehi govardhanatvam nijanikatani vasam dehi govardhanatvam. O Govardhan, you please let me reside near you. He's praying to Giriraj, who Krishna will lift in just a second. He's going to hoist him up and show Indra that, you idiot, you can't do anything to these people. These are my people. So Raghunath Das Goswami, he's praying to Giriraj. He's saying, you please let me just live near you. Let me just have a little house, little bhajan kutir, some leaves and a roof, and let me beg and let me chant. Let me just live near you. Nijanikatanivasam dehi govardhanatvam. You see, this is the 10th verse. So in the other 9 verses, he's given so many reasons for this, because every verse ends with the same line. He's given so many reasons and so many arguments. It's actually a dialogue between Raghunath Das and Govardhan. So many reasons. And finally, because Govardhan's not, he's not giving in so easily. He's Haridasvarya, and he's the other most merciful aspect of Krishna next to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. But he's not giving in so easily. He's playing with Raghunath Das Goswami, and he's refuted all of his arguments. And so finally, Raghunath Das, he says, he checkmates Govardhan. How does he checkmate Govardhan? He checkmates Govardhan with Nirupadi Karunena, with the unqualified, no rules mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Nirupadi Karunena. Upadi, we all hear this word upadi, that it means coverings. Our upadis, I identify as a brahmachari, as a man, as a 27-year-old, as an American. These are all upadis. They're all eventually going to go away. I'm going to die, and if I don't enter into spiritual existence, I'm going to get a whole new set of upadis. I may be a pig, I may be a dog, I may be a Nigerian, whatever. I may be Chinese, Nigerian. I may be born in a, you know, working in a sweatshop. I may be born in a mansion and have lots of money. But these are all upadis. So they, no designations, no conditions. Nirupadi karunena. Karuna means mercy. Nirupadi karunena shri shachi nandanena twai kapatishatopi twat priyena arpitosmi. He says, O Govardhan, I've been given to you, priyena arpitosmi, by your most dear Gauranga Mahaprabhu, shri shachi nandanena, your most dear Gauranga Mahaprabhu, out of his very, very, very deep mercy, which has no qualification, it has no question of fitness or unfitness. Out of that mercy, he's given me to you, because we've all heard in Chaitanya Charitamrita, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu sent Raghunath Das to Vrindavan, and he said, you worship this Govardhan Shila with this Gunjamala. And so Raghunath Das is saying to Giriraj, he's saying, he literally gave me to you. You have to accept me. Please accept me. Please accept me. Even though I'm fallen, he says, Twai kapati shatopi, I am a kapati, I am shata. Shata in Sanskrit, it means the most terrible, despicable liar, the most untrustworthy person you can imagine. Kapati, I'm a cheater. Twai kapati shatopi, I've been given to you, even though I'm the most despicable cheater. Nirupadi karanena, out of his causeless mercy, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given me to you, so please accept me. And Giriraj has to accept. This is very important for us to understand, because this is our process. We want to go to Vraj, right? We want to go to Vraj, even if we only wanted a little bit. We've read Prabhupada's books, we chant Hare Krishna. At the end of the day, we want to go to Vraj. We want to serve Krishna, we want to serve Radha. We want to serve the Vrajvasis. This is what we want. We may not want it every second or every day or every week. Sometimes in our lives, maybe not even every month. Maybe it only comes once in a year when we hear our Guru Maharaj speak or somebody inspiring speak. But ultimately, somewhere deep down in the heart, we want to go to Vraj. And our process is, even if we're the worst person, Dwai Kapatisha Topi, like Raghunath Das Goswami is claiming to be, because he's giving this for us as well. He feels like this, but that's because when you have prema like that, you feel low. You have real humility. Dainya comes as a result of prema. So we want to attain Vraj, and even if we're like this, if we take shelter of the Nirupadi Karuna of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then Govardhan cannot tell us no. Vrindavan Dham cannot say no. Krishna will not say no. Radharani will not say no. Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Mai, she will not say no. If we take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. Because that mercy is the most deep, beautiful, wonderful, overarching thing. And that's its purpose. And so, in pleasing Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, by taking shelter of that mercy and allowing him to experience giving that mercy, we also get the highest thing. And then it goes on and on. We can talk, the devotees, they relish a type of pleasure that is deeper than what Krishna gets to relish. You see, because if you only hear this, it sounds, well, maybe it's so. Krishna's just doing it because he wants to enjoy pleasure. But actually, the way it works, in the beginning of Chaitanya Charitamrita, we hear about this. We hear about this. Kaviraj Goswami, he explains Krishna's mind. He explains that Krishna, he looks at the gopis, and he thinks, specifically he looks at Srimati Radharani, and he thinks, how is it that I relish such bliss from our relationship, but she relishes 10 million times more than I do, even though she's not even looking to relish. She's not even looking to enjoy at all. She only cares about my happiness. And her happiness is a billion times more than my happiness. And so then Krishna thinks, I want to taste that. What is that? That's not fair. And so he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to taste that. Again, I won't go deep into that. It's already 8:30. This is something we could speak on for hours and hours. This is the crux of our philosophy. This is really what it means to worship Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. To facilitate his trying to taste what the devotees can taste. But by becoming a devotee, one can also taste that. That is it's the rightful claim of a devotee. It's what they get. It's just what you get. It comes with the job. It comes with the job description. Unlimited ecstasy, higher than that which God relishes himself. This is what it means to be a devotee. Of course, we have to go through the process of not desiring that and actually selflessly desiring Krishna's happiness. And then that comes as a byproduct. It's a pretty nice byproduct, but it comes as a byproduct. So it's not that we aspire to enjoy more than Krishna. But this is what Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is trying to do. This is why he exists. So we know these things and we can see this is actually a pretty sweet deal. It's pretty amazing. The opportunity that we're being given, it's amazing. So it's Gaur Purnim today. Let us take advantage of that opportunity in whatever way we possibly can. Let us take shelter of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Let us chant, dance, and later we'll feast after we fast all day. What to do? Sometimes it's like we condense it into, all right, at least for a day, I show you I'm really committed, so I'm not going to eat. And then in that way, you know, We can see that, all right, you're doing everything. You're giving unqualified mercy. Let me at least try for it a little bit. Let us try. And know that it literally only depends on our consciousness. If we just recognize that, yeah, I'm in a bad position and I need mercy, immediately those hands are there to catch us. This is the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Nityananda Prabhu. So happy Gaur Purnim. Grantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. If there are any comments, questions, or corrections, please, they're more than welcome. And if there is anything nice here, it wasn't mine, it's my guru's. So no need to pass the credit to me. You can just send it up the chain. Looks like you're up, Captain.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. I always give a wonderful class. We could discuss these points all the time, because you made many wonderful points, but the highlight point I'd like to, that you were mentioning, is that you were kind of highlighting that, you know, the you could say demoniac things people do to each other, like what Indra did, the things people do to each other, that was the phrase you mentioned. And there's a phrase I've heard throughout my whole life. It comes from being insecure. Now, I never know what that meant, but there's a nice quote I heard, which
Can
means
you say
that,
it again? All I heard was insecure.
Yeah. Throughout my whole life, I heard people generally give advice. The reason they're the reason people are treating you like that is because they're insecure.
Okay.
And we see we have to secure the treasury. If we don't secure the treasury, we won't be able to pay the bills. The temple is going to go down. So there's a nice quote that says, you would never invite a thief into your house. So why would you allow thoughts that steal your joy to make themselves at home in your mind? And we see Indra, he allowed the thoughts of pride, envy, and vengeance. Come on in, steal my peace of mind. And he committed very demoniac things. And if I was to connect this to Chaitanya, he says, our maximum security is Trinada Bisuni Chena, Todor Iva Sahi Shinuna. Now my question is that I'm speaking theoretically. When it comes to the thoughts still in my mind, you know, I could speak all I want, but so we hear that we should pray for Krishna's mercy. We could speak all the philosophy we want, and we should pray for Krishna's mercy. However, my question is maybe this is a reference for devotees. My question is the same one that is given in 11th canto. There's a chapter called Aila Gita. And in verse 12, King Puturava, he says a nice question that I think is relevant to all of us. He says, Kim vidyaya kim tapasa kim tiyagena shutenava kim vivektena maunena shtribir yasa manohitan. He says, what is the use of all these austerities, this knowledge, for maximum security, when the ghost of lust, anger, greed, pride, envy, and vengeance is still entering my consciousness, still in my most valuable wealth, my peace of mind, and my remembrance of Krishna. So my question is, how do we maintain our enthusiasm and faith in Krishna that I'm praying every day, but my mind is still stolen by pornography? I'm watching that all day long, and my mind is stolen by envy. When I hear the glories of somebody, you know, I'm still miserable. I'm still... So how do we maintain our faith in Krishna that this process is work, and keep going every day and stay enthusiastic in our Krishna consciousness? So anyway, that's my goal.
Well, there's a lot of answers. First, we should understand that it's expected that we're going to fail a lot. Trinadapi sunichena, though we wear this like a band, like we use this like our slogan, this is a very, very high state. This means nishta, according to our acharyas. Trinadapi sunichena, turoriva sahishtuna, amanina, amandadena, kirtaniya sadahari. It's not normal. It's not normal that you're going to, for one, kirtaniya sadahari, we don't chant all day. And for two, the reason is we don't have these qualities yet. We're not at nishta. The bulk of devotees are in anarchana vritti. It's very important to understand these things are coming out because of the practice of bhakti. That's what anarchana vritti is. Prabhupada said, you're stirring up the pond. These nasty things, they come out, this mud. You have a very clear pond, but it's got a very muddy bottom. If you throw a rock into it, the mud comes up, and then you can't see through the pond anymore. It's very important to understand, by doing this practice, all of the hypocrisy and the cheating and the lying and the lust and the anger and the greed, it comes out of the heart. Just as when you boil turdal. Does everybody here know what dal is? Mung dal, turdal? When you make khichdi, these little split beans. If you've ever cooked dal, when you first cook it, some very nasty foam comes up. And it comes for 10 or 15 minutes. And if you don't turn the heat down, it boils over and it seems endless. So much nasty foam comes. And you have to scrape it off. It's very unhealthy. But it's part of the process of cooking that it comes out and then you throw it away. This is also what happens with bhakti. We start cooking. Bhakti is very hot. It's very difficult at times. It's not easy. Somebody can't walk in from a life of new age spirituality and start doing bhakti because in New Age spirituality, it's all about appearance. It's all about, yes, I opened my third eye yesterday, and now everything's going to be okay. But then you go back to your job, and you hate your coworkers, and you hate your life, and you're waiting for the next festival in order to pretend you have it all together. I know, because I did that for freaking 7 years. I'm not, you know, God, that was my life. And it was nice. At that point, it was what I needed. It helped me to give me a springboard into more substantial spirituality. But somebody who practices that type of spirituality is not going to be able to take the heat of a real spiritual practice, because a real spiritual practice means I realize all of this crap is in my heart and I want it out. And it doesn't just go away by me saying I want it out. The realization that it's there is the beginning, and then you have to go through the process of extricating it. This is an art and a vritti. And it comes long before Trinadapisunichena. Therefore, what's the verse that comes before Trinadapisunichena? Nam nam akari bahuda nija sarva shakti statrapita nihamita smadanena kala. Eta drishita vakripa bhagavan mamapi. Dur daivam idrisham ihajani nanuragaha. Although you've given no rules, you've removed all of the requirements, you've no time, place, circumstance, nothing matters as far as chanting the holy name. You've invested it with nana, all of your shaktis. Every shakti, every power is in the holy name. I don't even want to chant it. This is a result of offense. I have no taste whatsoever. This is a result of offense. This is a result of the fact that we have this thick covering of nasty stuff in the heart, and it's coming out. So once that comes out, once we boil the dal long enough, the dal, the foam is gone, and it does go. If you've ever cooked, the foam will be gone. And then the dal will cook without any more foam coming out, and you can actually increase the heat at that point. Before, when the foam is coming, when you're cooking the dal, you have to keep it on medium-low until you scrape all the foam off, but then you can crank it up to 8, and you can cook that dal. This is nishta, this is trinadapi, this is what you're expressing. So my answer is we have to understand the process. If we don't understand the process, we'll get scared and stop, and we may go 15 years like that, 20 years, a lifetime. I've met devotees. When I first came to Krishna consciousness, one devotee told me, hey, I came to Mangalarti every day for 10 years, and now I'll go for a couple months, and then I'll take a month off, because that way Maya can't get me, because if she sees that you're too serious, she'll grab you. No, this is ridiculous. It's a ridiculous philosophy. No, you're an artist come up when you do spiritual practice. But if you don't understand that and you think, oh, that's Maya, the bad things in my life are Maya, oh, so I have to avoid that, you'll come up with all manner of crazy philosophies that are going to, you think, help you avoid that. But actually, you're just helping yourself stay in the exact same place. And bhakti is not about standing in the same place. Even when you're realized, bhakti is about always moving forward. Radha and Krishna are always moving forward. They're always increasing their happiness. There is no static position. It's ecstatic. It's beyond the position of stasis. There is no stasis in bhakti. It's meant to be wonderful and happy and increasing at all times. But before we get to the happy part, we at least have to continue. Tivrena bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. We worship Krishna knowing, because of our shastra buddhi, because of our understanding of the process and our understanding of the scriptures, that I can move forward in this. And anything that's happening as a result of this practice is a good thing. And we have so many of Krishna's words to back this. Yoga kshemam vahamyaham. I carry what you lack and I preserve what you have. You know, I keep it going forward. What is it? Oh man. What, everybody? No. No, another verse. No, there's no loss or diminution. Neha vikrama nashusti pratyavaya navidyate. Neha vikrama, even a little tiny step, even if you put one toe in the water, you put the tip of your pinky toe in the water, or you say your big toe, your pinky, it would be hard to put just the tip of your pinky toe in the water. Neha vikrama nashusti is never destroyed, whatever you did. Pratyavaya navidyate, it doesn't reduce pratyavaya even a little bit ever. It's very important to understand this, not just parrot it. I've parroted it for too long. If I understand it, then I realize, wow, that's never going away. And that means that's never going away. that's never going away. We develop a little faith and move forward into that. These other things are going to fade. And the last thing, it's 8:44. We had to start 15 or so minutes late, and we're not eating breakfast anyway, so I'll say one last thing. It's very important to realize that this isn't so much important to think about for myself. It's important to know so that we can do our practice, but it's very, very, very important that we apply this to other devotees. Other devotees are going through this practice and this process of things coming out of their heart. And so we, being around them, are going to see that. We're going to see that boiling and all that gross film and stuff coming out. But that's because they're doing bhakti, not because they're fallen rascals who I shouldn't be around and who suck and any other number of much worse expletives than what I just said. Things that we attach to devotees. We have to realize they're going through the process. We have faith in pure devotional service. It doesn't matter so much what a person is going through. We just respect and love them because they're devotees and because they will become pure, and we encourage. This is very important. It's very important because on the other side, if you get sucked into focusing on everybody else's faults, it's Kali Yuga. There's no dearth of faults. You can find faults in practically anybody. It's everybody's subpar. That's Kali Yuga. So I'll end there. Is Sankalpa, you have something? Oh yeah, please, there may be some people online.
Hello.
Again,
hello.
We're all fasting, so
So you were mentioning how the magnanimous nature of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is unprecedented. And so just like for an example question, let's say you did something so horrible in terms of aparad, like Brahmahatya at Radhakund, for example, would Mahaprabhu's mercy still be able to carry you through that dire, dire offense?
Of course.
Finished, yeah. My question.
I mean, Tulsi, even you just circumambulate Tulsi, we say this every day. Yani kani cha papani, brahma hatyadi kani cha. Did you do it in Radhakund? That doesn't mean nothing can disqualify you from Mahaprabhu's mercy. Things can slow you down, but you're not disqualified. You're not out of the race. If you cut off your leg, you can still crawl to the finish line. It's still there. And actually, if those things help you to realize your fallen nature, then you may get there faster. If you do something really, really bad, and then that causes enough suffering for you to realize, you know, wow, I'm really a terrible person, and I really need help. And you call out to Mahaprabhu for that mercy.
In that mood,
then you may get the mercy faster.
Yeah.
We see this actually. Gopal Chapala, he got a lot of mercy. Gopal Chapala, he got a lot of mercy, even though he offended Haridas Thakur. He on the front, he said, what you're speaking about the holy name is bogus. Show me in the Shastra where it says the holy name does, it will deliver anybody, and it's so amazing, and you're bogus. That's basically what he said to Haridas Thakur. And Haridas Thakur just accepted and said, I'm sorry, you're very learned, you know, I'm an idiot. And then Gopal Chapala got leprosy immediately.
Oh, yeah.
And then he went to live, his nose fell off, he was very beautiful. Actually, it said he was known for his beautiful nose. His nose melted off of his face in a night. But then he realized what he did. And then Mahaprabhu personally went to him and gave him his mercy.
And he hugged him up?
Yeah. I believe so. Yeah, yeah. He hugged him. And there are many stories like this in Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, no, nothing can ever stop you from getting Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy. And there, we can do things that slow us down. But yogakshemam vahamyam. Krishna tells us that. So what to speak of Mahaprabhu's mercy? Lord Ram says, if anybody takes shelter of me even once, I will never forsake him. Even if he does all the worst things you can imagine, I'll never, ever forsake him. I'm sorry, I have one more story now that I thought about it. This is really, really unbelievably poetically beautiful. So Lord Ram, he's in the forest with Lakshman and Sita Devi, and he's walking along. And as they're walking, see, Ram, he went without shoes. And Sita Devi was thinking, please, wear some shoes. There are thorns. There are so many things. And she saw that his feet were getting pricked by thorns. And she was thinking, okay, let me clean your feet. Let me take these thorns out of your feet, because this is her husband. This is Lord Ram. You can imagine the level of, you can't imagine the level of intimacy and love Sita Devi has for Lord Ram. And to see if you've been to India, some of the thorns there are this freaking long. I've had one in my foot this long walking around Govardhan. Literally, you don't see it. It just ow! you go to pull it out because you're like, well, it must only be that long. And it just keeps coming. And oh my, it's like I have a nail in my foot. So Lord Rama is walking in the forest and he's getting these thorns in his feet. And Sita Devi at night is saying, please let me take these thorns out of your feet. And Ram said, don't worry about this, don't worry about this. And every day he's getting more thorns in his feet. And Sita Devi is just dying. She's like, my God, no, I can't take this anymore. And she's lamenting over it. She goes to Lakshman and she says, Lakshman, you please talk some sense into him. You please tell him to let me clean his feet, or you clean his feet, fix these thorns, get him some shoes. This is ridiculous. We're eating roots and fruits and we're living under a different tree every night. And, you know, if we're doing enough, he doesn't need this austerity. Why this austerity? And Lakshman goes to Lord Ram and he says, why are you keeping these thorns in your feet? You're paining Sita and me so much. Sita and I are so, it just tears our hearts apart to see these thorns in your feet. And Lord Ram, he said, what can I do? If someone takes shelter of me, I never give them up. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable. This is Lord Ram. What to speak of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy? Lord Ram, even you're a thorn. You do nothing but cause pain and blood. And you're of no use and no assistance. Somehow or other, those thorns took shelter of Lord Ram's lotus feet. What to speak of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu? So it's 8:50, I'll end there. Gantharaj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Shushi Kishore Kishore Ki Jai. Jagannath Baladev Subhadra Maharani Sudarshan Ji Ki Jai. Shushi Gaur Nitai Ki Jai. Shri Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur Ki Jai. Shri Prabhupada Ki Jai. Vaishnava Bhakti Vrinda Ki Jai. Gaur Pranim Mahotsav Ki Jai. Thank you.